Chapter 1. In the Matter of Mrs. Del Fresco. In the spring of 1941, a man named Tony Del Fresco married a woman named Teresa Del Frisco in Tampa, Florida. This was, unfortunately, the only slightly amusing thing anyone could remember about their marriage. He once hit her with a bottle. She once hit him with a croquet mallet. The mallet belonged to Tony, who'd brought it over from Arezzo some years before and placed wickets and stakes in the Del Fresco's swampy backyard on the west side of Tampa. Tony repaired clocks by day and cracked safes by night. He claimed croquet was the only thing that settled his mind, which, by his own admission, was filled with a permanent rage made all the blacker for being inexplicable. Tony had two good jobs, after all, a pretty wife, time on weekends for croquet. However black the thoughts in Tony's head may have been, they all leaked out when Teresa caved in the side of his skull with the mallet early in the winter of 1943. Detectives concluded that after delivering the initial incapacitating blow, Teresa had stepped on her husband's cheekbone, fixed his head to the kitchen floor, and swung the mallet into the back of his skull until it looked like a pie that fell off a window ledge. By trade, Teresa was a florist, but most of her true income derived from robbery and the occasional murder, both crimes usually committed on behalf of her boss, Lucius Brugiuola, whom everyone called King Lucius. King Lucius paid the necessary tribute to the Bartolo family, but otherwise ran an independent organization, with the illicit profits laundered through the phosphate empire he'd amassed along the Peace River, and the wholesale flour business he owned in the port of Tampa. It had been King Lucius who had trained Teresa as a florist in the first place, and King Lucius who financed the flower shop she opened downtown on Lafayette. King Lucius ran a crew of thieves, fences, arsonists, and contract killers who operated under only one concrete rule: no jobs performed in their home state. So Teresa, over the years, had killed 5 men and 1 woman, all strangers, 2 in Kansas City, 1 in Des Moines, another in Dearborn, 1 in Philadelphia, and finally, the woman in Washington, D.C. Teresa turning to shoot her in the back of the head, 2 steps after passing her on a soft spring evening in Georgetown, on a tree-lined street that ticked with the remnants of an afternoon shower. In one way or another, all those killings haunted her. The man in Des Moines had held a picture of his family in front of his face, forcing her to fire the bullet through it to reach his brain. The one in Philly kept saying, "Just tell me why." The woman in Georgetown had let out a plaintive sigh before she'd crumpled to the wet pavement. The one killing that didn't haunt Teresa was Tony's. She only wished she'd done it sooner, before Peter was old enough to miss his parents. He'd been staying with her sister in Lutz that fateful weekend because Teresa had wanted him out of the line of fire when she kicked Tony out of his own house. His drinking, whoring, and black moods had been spiraling out of control since the summer, and Teresa had finally reached her limit. Tony hadn't reached his, though, which is how he came to hit her with a wine bottle and how she came to crush his fucking head with a mallet. At the Tampa City jail, she called King Lucius. 30 minutes later, Jimmy Arnold, house counsel to King Lucius and his various corporations, was sitting across from her. Teresa was worried about 2 things. Going to the chair, and finding herself unable to provide for Peter. Her control over whether she was electrocuted up in the state penitentiary at Rayford ended with her husband's life. As for securing Peter's future comfort, however, she had been waiting on payment for a job from King Lucius himself, a job that had harvested so bountiful a profit margin that her 5% stake would ensure that the stomachs of Peter, Peter's children, and Peter's grandchildren never rumbled from anything but a second helping. Jimmy Arnold assured her that on both counts the outlook was rosier than she presumed. In the first matter, he'd already informed District Attorney Archibald Bowl of her history of being beaten by her deceased husband, beatings that had been documented on the 2 occasions Tony's fury had put her in the hospital. The DA, a very smart and politically conscious man, would not send an abused wife to the death chamber when there were plenty of German and Jap spies old Sparky would be glad to host first. As for the monies due her from the Savannah job, Jimmy Arnold was authorized to say that King Lucius was still in the process of finding a buyer for the merchandise in question, but as soon as he'd done so and the monies had been received, she would be the second participant to get her cut. After King Lucius himself, of course.